Disclaimer. The views and opinions you hear expressed by the participants in this show are not the views of AnimeNewsNetwork.com. Enjoy the show. Everybody, welcome to Ancaster. Welcome back. I guess we had a week off there. Needed a little time off. Mm-hmm. I think we.
Oh gosh, swamped.
Yeah, you and I have been
swamped.
Yeah, we've been working a lot, but we bitch about that like every week about how busy we are. So
we've been busy for like a month and a half.
That's
true.
It's been
up.
Really bad.
Yeah,
it's been really bad. There will probably be more hiatuses within the next couple of months.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to slowing down a bit. Yeah,
yeah, we got to slow down a little bit, but it's okay. We're here. We're back. I'm happy to be back. Thanks to everyone in the chat for stopping by. How you doing, Jacob?
I'm doing a-okay.
Yeah
a little wobbly.
Yeah,
I'm having a lot of fun writing those Utena reviews,
so
stoked about that.
We should talk a little bit. There's some site notes up front. You are doing Utena reviews, weekly Utena reviews on the site. Every week on Thursdays, there's a new episode review of Utena. Either one or two. You're kind of taking it as it comes. Please explain your methodology a little bit for like how you decide if it's one or two episodes in a review.
There is a full like paste bin that's linked in the first review of this is the schedule going forward, so people know exactly which weeks.
Oh, good.
Have
okay,
one.
Right.
And so that is in there, but like my methodology was basically like if this is a two-parter, then duh, I just do it in 1 week. And if it's kind of connected plot-wise or whatever, I just thought about how much I'm going to have to talk about a thing in a week and squished it appropriately and then did the squishing just enough to get it to 24 weeks. So that was my methodology.
Right, because the thing is with daily streaming reviews, like whenever we do those, excuse me, the consideration has always got to be, like, how long is the show?
Uh-huh.
And, like, you don't really want to have... Like, if you have one streaming reviewer who wants to do, like, say, Gundam Wing.
Right.
Like, if they don't do that two episodes at a time, it's a full year of episode reviews.
Yeah.
That's a whole year of their life writing that show up every week. So you have to take these things into consideration.
Right.
How long do you really want someone writing that up? And... Like, your time is a little too valuable to the site to have you writing up Utena for, like, an entire year or 39 weeks or however long that show
right.
is.
Right, it would be three cores, so to speak, and,
yeah.
and just getting it down to two. So it's not that much compression, and thanks to even though Utena is dense, thanks to the lack of animation and speed of storytelling that existed back, in 1997, it's not that bad.
Right. Yeah.
So.
Right. Cool. So I'm happy that those are up. Those are off to the races. Another thing. So I took some shit because in the last episode I was ranting about Tanya the Evil being a bunch of fascist jackoffery. That's not a phrase. But he used the term fascist, and like, so history guys get
World
upset
War One,
when
so
you say that
exactly
because
speaking.
It's technically riffing on the fake alt history, and Tanya is riffing on World War One, not World War Two, which was technically not fascism in World War One.
Yeah.
I'm sorry I got that wrong. Please stop emailing me. Yeah, I am so glad that fucking show is done.
Yeah.
I don't want anything to do with it anymore. I don't want to discuss it.
That's how I felt after the first episode.
Well,
and somebody was like, I'm going to keep watching this. And I'm like, no.
Feel.
All right.
Yeah. So we've got some video content up on the site, too, that I wanted to point out. You had a video from Namjatown, Yuri on Ice, go up. That's fun. Just today.
You can watch me consuming an ice cold poodle.
Yeah, it's a poodle crepe. That's it was pretty tasty.
It was actually really tasty.
Yeah, it was pretty good.
I feel like I underplayed it in the video just because I'm very glib. I don't know how you would describe it, but I'm very blasé about things a lot. But I gave it an 8 out of 10 because it was real tasty.
Yeah, that crepe got an 8 out of 10. the but I just put up a video today that I edited together about my trip to the PA Works exhibition for Earth Colors, which is an art book released by one of their famous art directors who did a bunch of background art for like Charlotte, Angel Beats, Nagino, right. Asakura, stuff like that.
Awesome.
He's well known for his stuff, but the thing that I wanted to talk about with regard to this was that I don't know if you feel the same way about this, but I've always felt really strongly, and the chance to do it is rare, but seeing production materials for anime in person, standing next to it, that's like a I hate to put it this way, it's hyperbolic, but the way it is a little bit of a spiritual experience. It's a little religious.
That's special.
Not only is it special, but there is a physicality to art that is completely unappreciated, I think, by a lot of people. I just wanted to talk about this for a little bit. In my life, like I've always been really into art and like going to art galleries and stuff, and like when you say that, it sounds like really snooty. Like, I like going to art galleries, and people are like, oh, okay, whatever, I'm not interested in talking to this guy. Like, I really like doing that, but I'm just really into visual art. Like, I think visually, everything, like, I'm a really visual person. I've always been really attracted to that kind of stuff. So I go to a lot of art galleries. Like, when I lived in New York, I would go to the museums there all the time. I live here, I go to the museums fairly often and see new gallery exhibitions and stuff. Going physically to this exhibition and like standing in front of this dude's art, like these big canvases, and being able to get right in there, like put your face right in this thing, like you really see what an incredible mastery of light and color that guy has. Like, it's astonishing. The depth and the detail and the color and the light in his work. You won't even get that really on the Blu-ray. Like, you won't get it on the highest possible definition because there's still a filter between you and the artwork. Seeing it in person is, like, it's really something. Like, you really feel it in the same way that you feel it when you, like, you see a picture of Starry Night, Van Gogh's Starry Night, and you stand in front of Starry Night, and those are two totally different experiences. And when you, like, stand in front of Starry Night, the colors, like, leap off of... Like, it is a visceral experience standing there in front of that canvas.
Right.
And it's... I just wanted to point out, it's the same with anime production materials and stuff. I've always felt that way. Like, when we go to, like...
Well, those backgrounds are super impressive as well.
They're very... Yeah. Like, well, that guy's a master. But when we go to, like, Mandarake when we're there in Japan and see, like... Like, in the windows of Mandarake, they have, like, production cells. And, like, one time I was there and they had production cells from, like, End of Evangelion and, like, Princess Mononoke and stuff, right?
It was specifically the moment, I believe, where Rei's...
Yeah.
Not Rei's head is beginning to fall off at the end.
It's been pierced and the blood's starting to come out and she's standing right. Like this.
You can see the neck bones.
And the price you see on it is, like... 20,000 yen or something like that, and you're like, what?
That's the starting bid
at auction and not the actual price. Like, right. You run into the store, I'd like to buy that, and they're like, yeah, nice try. So if you ever have the opportunity to do that, and sometimes that stuff goes on touring exhibitions, very seldomly, but there was an exhibition here a while ago where they had original production art from Robot Carnival and Akira and Ghost in the Shell and all that stuff. I think that was curated by Charles Solomon. And I got to go to that too. And it's really special and interesting. And if you're into this stuff and you haven't had that physical experience of like being next to the production and just standing there and breathing it in and looking at it, like, I highly recommend it. I highly recommend it. Right. Take a look at the video that we posted, and it's a cool thing. I'm really glad I got to do that, and I wish we had more opportunities here to do stuff like that.
Yeah, that reminds me. Not that it's nearly as impressive per se, but a while back, I think you found on eBay and bought. There was a piece of Genga from Wolf's Rain. Somewhere around here. I don't know where it went.
It's in the closet. I know.
So, I need to find that. But
Yeah, I really like that stuff. It's not something you really get to mess with all that often, but when you do, it's super fun. Hang on, fix my hair.
While you're doing that, my computer's just freaking out right now, so if we could just put an edit here.
Okay, we can put an edit spot like, whoa. Sorry, guys, 1 second, technical difficulties.
Fucking trying to launch Java, piece of shit. Anyway.
Okay, you ready?
Yes.
Okay. All right. So I haven't had that much time to watch like a ton of anime.
Yeah.
But the thing I've been doing, I've been playing like a lot of video games. And I'll talk about a lot of this stuff more in a couple weeks when we do our usual E3 game show episodes. But I've been playing a lot of this game Nier Automata that I've talked about on the podcast a little bit, but I have since played it more. You're supposed to finish that game like a bunch of times. It has like, it's not, you're not really playing it over and over again, although there is a little bit more repetition than I was led to believe. You have to keep getting to the end of the game, and you're experiencing the narrative through different characters. And I have finished the second route, and I'm starting on the third route. And I honestly think, like, if that had been an anime, it would be the only thing anybody's talking about. Right. That it's a game, it's still kind of only that in Persona 5, but
it has to share space.
If you're an anime person and you like the kind of anime that we like, that we talk about on this show a lot, you should play that game. And it's a platinum style action game, but the easy mode on that game is so easy that you can just turn it on and walk through the game and see the story. The story and the writing and the atmosphere and the art design are some of the best I've ever seen. Mm-hmm. And people should, one, if you like anime at all, and you also like video games, you should play Nier. That's my recommendation.
If you like Android bottoms.
Yeah. It's, well, that game is like...
Sorry, I can't.
Yeah, no, but yeah, the game is super horny, and it's better for that. It's more interesting for that. It's funnier for that. It's the whole thing comes together in a package that is just fucking undeniable quality. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm still kind of getting over how good that game is.
Japan is, like, just pumping out the masterpiece games now. Because Breath of the Wild, Nier Automata, Persona 5. Like, I've heard everyone call them masterpieces, like, one after the other.
You spend, like, every evening playing Zelda still.
Well, I wish I could spend every... It's more like every other evening at this point. But, yeah. I'm trying to 100% it. So I'm chipping away at it like a big stone marble of, like, eventually I will have 100% on this file. And I will take a picture for Twitter. And I'll be like, I did it. I found every fucking Korok seed. Praise me. You know.
Yeah. Are you really going to find every Korok seed?
Eventually. It'll probably take me like 3 months or so of little bitty plays.
But we haven't bought a Switch yet. I was thinking of like, when I get the Switch, I figure I'll get the Switch when Mario comes out. Or closer to when Mario comes out. I kind of want Mario Kart, though. Mm-hmm. It's fucked up. My relationship with not buying consoles is bad. Be like, nope. The minute I see one like actually for sale in a store, it's probably mine. Anyway. Right. When we buy a Switch, I figured I would get Breath of the Wild again so that we could experience it with, like, a higher fidelity and, like, fewer frame rate problems.
Oh, God.
That version is now better than the Wii U version, like, I think by a more significant margin, because they patched it up a few times. I don't know. I'm looking forward to the DLC on that game.
Me too. I'm like, more story.
I think the first DLC is, like, just hard mode, which... Okay, but I'm excited. Like,
there's other ones. In August, they said there's going to be some sort of like extra story or extra quest stuff in August. So,
yeah, I'm excited about that. Okay, man. So I've been talking for a little while. Tell us, what anime have you been watching this season?
What anime haven't I been watching this season?
Yeah, I only have Sakura Quest to talk about. That's what I had time for.
Oh, really? You didn't catch up on Recreators?
No, I didn't. Sorry, I didn't have time. Oh. Well, why don't we start with Recreators then? I'm not caught up on it, but it's only two episodes in. So, how's it going so far?
Well, it's three, and the story is still playing hard to get. Like, it's really interesting to see an anime that shows so much restraint when it comes to, like, they're not going to sit down and be like the blah 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 and like try to dump a bunch of story on you. Like, it's still mostly just here's an excuse for an action scene. And we're just kind of letting everything play out naturally. Like, the episode 3 is entirely an episode where they're experimenting with how can they change the fictional world, and what do you have to do in order to do that. So, like, they get the author of a light novel, and they get his illustrator, and they ask them to, like, write a thing and draw it to see if it'll change in the real world. And they realize that it doesn't. And they're like, okay, well, what is the secret? And as far as they can tell, it seems to be cultural impact. So it's like, oh, you have to make it canon in the minds of people. So you would have to release that thing, and people would have to, like, really
know
believe
what
in it.
Is.
Yeah, clap if you believe in fairies and
that's
stuff
interesting.
Like that. And so,
not just any old shit.
But you can't just do anything. And so, So anyway, but we still don't know what the villain's plan is. We still don't really know much about the other characters who were introduced, all this other stuff. I don't know. All of it's just really feels natural and interesting and easy to watch. And yeah, it's not interested in like telling you about the world and be like, "Now sit down, we're going to explain this lore so you can follow what happens later." It's just sort of this natural, fun thing. And it's very Ray Heroway, who, again, like the only other work that he's really known for is Black Lagoon, but there's a lot of Black Lagoon. So you're pretty, if you've seen it, you're pretty
familiar. Is there a lot of Black Lagoon?
Yeah, there were like how many? There were two seasons of the show and the manga went past that and there's a couple OVAs. Like,
that's not that much.
Okay, yeah, it's not like a bazillion miles of it, but it's
like
it's
when you say there's a
enough.
Lot of an anime, I start thinking like, oh, Toriko.
No, yeah, well, I mean, yeah, but I just mean like, so Black Lagoon is vignette based, right? So there's more of Black Lagoon than there is Cowboy Bebop. Cowboy Bebop covers like a wide swath of, oh, I fully get like these writers and artists because it was a bunch of little ideas they had. So Black Lagoon is like, here's all the little ideas this guy has. So you get a pretty complete picture of his tastes as a writer and what he finds fun. And what he finds fun, for the most part, is sort of like nerdy action, for lack of a better word, in that it's fully, like, you know, competent action that you could put in a Hollywood movie, but there's just a little bit of extra nerdy glee to it. It, again, it's like Kota Hirano if he was less gross. And I don't mean gross in an insulting way.
So, like,
I just
if
mean
you took
Helsing
the
is more gross,
gross,
right?
If you took, like, the gross violence, like, the bloodthirstiness that's under Helsing's violence and replaced it with, like, a nerdy zeal, would you say that?
Yeah, where it's not, like, horrible, disgusting ultra-violence. It's just somebody casually capping somebody and saying something cool. So it's a little more Hollywood, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean,
I've seen
one season of Black Lagoon, and it's okay.
Right.
Like, it's riffing on American action movies.
Right. Well, this is just riffing on otaku media. There's a character
cool.
that...
I should watch it.
Yeah. But there's a character, so the most... They've revealed, like, the rule behind this is that there's one character from each work so far, and it's not the protagonist, it's whoever was most culturally relevant from the story. So, like, you know, in our world, I guess it would be Darth Vader would show up and not Luke Skywalker, right? If it was Star Wars. And so this guy who's basically clearly sort of an XB for, like, Dio or other characters like him in a long-running Shonen Jump series. So basically the Sasuke or the Dio from some
sure.
Shonen Jump thing shows up instead of the Naruto or the JoJo. And he's just very blasé
That's
about all this.
That's the evil one in the trench coat?
He has a big long... He's purple hair and a big long sword.
Okay, okay.
And he's... yeah, and he's very blasé about it. Everybody else is like, oh, no, my existential dilemma. And he's like, meh.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you know. It's pretty great. But yeah, show's real fun so far. It's not like, you know, trying to do anything super complex as far as commenting on light novels, but it's just extremely easy to watch and just, like... It's not doing the awkward, like, nerd lore dump thing. It's just good. It's just simple and good, you know.
Cool. Yeah, I'll get to it next week. It's still in early days. There's only 3 episodes out. I watched the first one. But it was definitely one of those cases where it's like, well, I kind of want to wait and see what the story is on this. But it sounds like every week it's got something new.
Mm-hmm.
To show you, and like the story's written in yeah. a fun, snappy way. And stuff.
Yeah, well, there's also there's a magical girl that shows up, and she's like shocked to deploys like it's a giant pink heart that blows up a building, right? And but she's shocked when like it causes like real property damage, and there's people like bleeding, and there's like you know there's like horrible dust and debris, and it's a little bit you know like actual natural disaster-y, and she's like, oh my god, and you know because in her world it's not really how things work, you know, like you can blow up a building, but it's not really a big deal, and there's certainly no blood, you know.
Yeah.
And so she's like, it's really funny because this like little girl is like super uncomfortable. Anyway, it's good stuff.
So, anything else really standing out?
Yeah, several things. I mean, Attack on Titan is baller right now.
I want to talk
it's
a little bit
so
about...
so good right now.
I want to talk a little bit about Attack on Titan and, like, its place. Mm-hmm. Because before it came out, everybody was like, did they wait too long? Like, I don't think... I think maybe they did.
Uh-huh.
But based on what I am seeing... Culturally, Attack on Titan's in a pretty good place.
Yeah.
People are treating it now like, hey, remember Attack on Titan? It's back and it's really good. Like, mm-hmm. That's what everyone has been saying.
I
that
have heard. Yeah. I mean, there's.
To the point where I think the thing is not that they waited too long. Now the thing is, it's only 12 episodes.
Yeah.
This all goes away in a couple weeks.
Right.
Like, it's only a few weeks. It's like 2 months from now.
And yeah, I mean, like, Attack on Titan is a divisive show, certainly. Like, there are people like, oh, the pacing's too terrible to really enjoy it, or, oh, it's, you know, the writing's bad, or, you know, all these hot takes that I disagree with, but, it's,
Strawman version of all these hot takes.
I mean, those are fair complaints.
That's pretty much it.
Those are fair complaints. I'm just saying, like, I disagree with them, but I would say that they're common enough complaints, but, like, people who, like, have outwardly said, oh, I hate Attack on Titan, have been talking about how good this season is. So I don't know what it is, but I think it's just they're adapting the best material for the manga at a nice rapid clip, and people are just, like, down for it right now. So, yeah, people seem to be, like, really excited by this stuff. So I'm glad that they happened to stop 4 years ago or whatever at, like, the starting point for the best material from the manga, and now they're just, like, people are really hungry for it, but no, it's just really good right now, so
yeah, exciting. Well, that's I mean, and I'm happy to see that. I'm happy that it worked out that way, because it could have been like not good,
yeah,
and turned everyone off and ruined the franchise, but it turns out it's really good and everybody's super into it, and I'm not seeing like mostly, like, they waited too long or whatever, Attack on Titan. Like, no, it's, like, people are really excited that the show is back. I just want to point out, traffic on the episode reviews is fucking bananas. Like, yeah. I didn't think it was going to do that.
I don't think Crunchyroll...
It's doing better than Dragon Ball at this point.
Crunchyroll normally does a map of, like, the most popular shows in each country. Are they going to be able to do that this season? Because isn't it just going to be Titan everywhere? Like,
Titan and, like, Maine is, like...
Maine is something.
Records, yeah. Best.
But it's gonna just be Titan. And so, yeah, I don't know. It's interesting.
Yeah. that's funny. So let's talk a little bit about Soccer Request. I decided I was gonna watch that and Recreators. Mm-hmm. And so I had time for Soccer Request. And so originally everybody was saying this is basically just small town, like rural Shirobako.
Right.
Like, let's revitalize this little town, Shirobako. And. So there's two more episodes out, 2 and 3, since the last time we talked about it.
Oh, well, 4 as well.
Oh, I didn't see 4. I only saw 3.
4 is the good one to me. The first 3 were kind of meh, and 4 was actually good.
I didn't get to 4.
Well, what did you think?
Well, I got to the end of episode 3, and that's sort of where they form the Shirobako team.
Uh-huh.
That's when they kind of have the 5 ladies together. And I like that show a lot. I like it a little bit more than I said originally. You know what? I think the quality... Like, it doesn't have much in common with Shirobako. Like,
not really.
And I found it, like, the staff is not... It doesn't really have that much in common with Shirobako either. It's not written by any of the same people. It's not directed by any of the same people. Mm-hmm. It has the same character designer.
Right.
And, but it's not the same... The art director from Shirobako is the character designer on the show, but he's not the art director for the show.
Yeah,
the art director for this show is somebody else who did, like... I can't remember off the top of my head what other stuff they did, but...
it seems to be riding on the same, like, hook. It's more like...
Yeah, kind of, like,
you
five...
get the feeling people made it with, like, okay, make the key art look like Shirobako, make the premise and the early start feel like that. But yeah, underneath the surface. So it's more like, I think the marketing was thinking that way. When they came up with the show, it probably wasn't that originally. And then they were like, oh, let's make sure we can market this to look like this. Okay.
Yeah, totally. And that's fine. But, like, in terms of the tone of the show and what it's about and everything like that, it really doesn't have much in common with Shirobako. But I do like what it's doing. And I looked up the guy credited for series composition, which is, let me read it off the page here, Masahiro Yokotani.
Uh-huh.
He's also credited with series composition on, like, Sergeant Frog.
Mm-hmm.
And he did the entire series composition and, like, wrote all the episodes for Shimonetta, if you remember.
Yeah, I do.
Shimonetta. And, like, the problem with Shimonetta was not its comic timing. That was not really the problem with Shimonetta.
It was attempting to dip its toe.
Like, lame, fucking, like, really lame political commentary.
Yeah.
Like, you could have done so much with that, and you just didn't do anything at all with it. But the problem was not the comedy.
We'll always have the Love Nectar cookies.
Yeah.
There were some horrible gangs in there.
Yeah, right. There were... Some of them were, you know, not so bad.
No, I mean horrible in a good way. Right. Like, you know. But the actual attempt at satire was like, just don't bother. Just make a gross-out comedy.
But I feel like that sensibility kind of comes through. And the show is a low-key pleasure. Like, I am really enjoying it. And I like the little cast of characters. The thing about it that really struck me was that in the third episode, they walk up to a guy who owns a little shop, and they start asking him about the town. And he says, the town's dying. Like, there aren't too many kids running around here anymore. But by the time that really will be a problem, I won't really be running the store anymore. What, it's just happening. There's nothing you can do about it. Just every, like, we're fine without tourists. The town can sustain itself. Maybe not forever, but it can sustain itself. And I thought that was a pretty interesting take on Japanese rural ennui, because their political and social situation is very different from ours. And so a TV show that is about rural ennui is going to be an interesting contrast from America, because a lot of our political discussion right now is also about rural ennui. It's totally different from what they have in Japan. I mean, maybe not that different, but very different from the way it is in Japan. I just thought it was a fascinating contrast. I went out to try and look up some articles on this and see if there was anything out there about rural flight or just the population decline taking the biggest toll on rural areas.
Yeah.
And I didn't really find anything that was very recent right away. It seems like there was a lot of work done on that in 2014. But it really spiked my interest, and I'm curious to see what else that show is going to, if it's going to touch on that ever again or comment on it again. And I'm curious what else it has to say. It's very intriguing. I didn't really expect to take to it. I was a little kind of nonplussed. I was like, the first episode was like, yeah, it's all right.
First episode was pretty weak, and it gets stronger after that.
Yeah, it got pretty strong. So I like that show. I'm looking forward to watching the rest of it. How do you feel about it?
Well, again, like, I didn't really like the way it started, but it wasn't like I disliked it. I didn't like or nor dislike the way it started. The way it started was just like, this is a bunch of eccentric small town people, so I don't know what the show is actually going to do with their characters, because it was all pretty standard setup for this sort of thing. It was very Doc Hollywood, and it's like, okay, but
yeah,
what? But
the plot of Cars, yeah.
The plot of Cars. But it's like, but I had no idea where this was going to go, and I was like, this could be the most rote thing in the world, or it could be interesting, but I just have no idea. And it did become interesting. I thought, episode 4, which you haven't gotten to yet, I won't spoil, but it is the strongest by far, because it really doubles down. Episode 3 does this a little bit, and episode 4 really doubles down on the fact that the tourism team, I guess you could call them, is doing a lot of this in bad faith. Where it's like, okay, you're not really, what reasons are you trying to revitalize the town, and what does revitalizing the town mean to you? And without spoiling anything, they come up with a wacky idea, a wacky gimmick to get people to visit the town that involves a woodcarver there who does like super traditional wood carvings that are really like, you know, opulent and very time investment, you know, based and stuff like that. And he asks, during some sort of thing where they're criticizing him for not helping them or whatever, he points at a pile of wood that he's using for his next carving. He says, "What kind of wood is that?" Because they're using his work as a subject to get people to come visit in sort of a sensationalist way. And he says, "What kind of wood is that?" And he's like, "You don't know, do you? What are you trying to do revitalizing the town if you don't know anything about the subject that you're promoting? I guess that's not the exciting part for you." And it's like, it's stuff like that where it's like, they're not bad people or anything. Like, these are our protagonists. We're rooting for them. We understand why they're doing this. It's just that clearly they haven't found the actual reason, the actual good reason for doing what they're doing and how it will mesh with the town's actual interests, you know, which seem to be out of line. Like you were mentioning, like, oh, well, the town's dying, but that's fine or whatever. And they're like, well, it's not fine, but they're still outsiders. So they're not really in line with what the people really want. And so they're trying to find that, and that's what it's really about. It's not like wacky adventures to save the town, and gosh, these rural people sure are special. Like, it's not that. It's a more intimate study of the differences between these people's, like, motives and ways of seeing the world and stuff like that.
That's cool.
So, yeah, like, it got a lot better, I thought, in episodes 3 and 4, and so I'm looking forward to see where it goes in the future.
Cool, yeah. All right. That sounds really good. I'm excited to see that, so... Mm-hmm. Nice. Okay. Well, that's kind of what I had to watch. Oh, the guy who put the series together, credited with series composition, also did that on ReZero, which is, you know.
I mean, that was a difficult task, if I understand correctly. those books were, you know, like, long, and as I understand correctly, hacking that down into something that's easily understood in anime form was probably quite difficult, so he did a good job with that. So, that guy seems to know what he's doing as far as adaptive stuff goes.
It's cool. It's cool. Good times.
I mean, like, yeah, talking about Chimaneta, I did watch that whole thing. That show was not bad. It was just, it really should have been only a gross-out comedy, because the gross-out stuff was pretty good in it. It was pretty gross. It's just that, yeah.
Yeah.
There was no other point beyond that. and if in trying to fabricate one would was kind of a mistake. But the sex humor was pretty good. So, you know, depending on how easily you were offended, there's plenty to be offended about in that show, but I thought it was fairly funny. Tried a little too hard sometimes, but it's still funny.
It wasn't like... Like, that show could have been something really bad.
Oh, yeah. No, for the most part, its gross-out humor is just bodily function stuff and stuff. It's not, like... It's not lazy. The jokes, even when they are terrible, were not lazy. It was like, well, I've certainly not never thought of that before, and now I have, you know, kind of a thing, so...
Yeah.
And that's good, you know, at least being bold
I wonder
good.
How that's sold.
Not good, well, but I mean, not, here, like, horribly. Oh, I have no idea.
Probably not too good.
I wouldn't imagine.
They didn't promote it, like, at all. Mm-hmm. All right, man. Was there any other anime that you've been watching lately?
Jeez. I mean, yes.
I mean, yeah, but, like, what stands out?
What stands out? Well, I'm looking at the big list, and, I mean, there's stuff that stands out in not a great way, but I don't know if I should bring that stuff up or not.
Sure.
So that Suka Suka thing that everybody's creaming themselves about. Well, I thought we were past the whole key, sad girls dying thing. This is like...
Is it coming back around for another go?
Well, it's very different. It's not in the style of an eroge. It is in the style of a light novel, but I see all the hallmarks of, okay, you're setting up, like, there's gonna be some contrived reasons for this girl to, like, probably first lose her memory and then die or something. Like, I'm gonna guess that's what... Because that's always what happens. Like, first they try to milk the, oh, they fell in love, but then she doesn't remember thing, and then she's gonna, like, die, but then she's gonna come back, and then her ghosts are gonna kiss. It's that kind of thing. Like, where I'm just like, I thought maybe we were over this, but I guess this is back, just as long as you dump, like, 10 pounds of light novel lore over the top of it. Anyway, I am very unimpressed, but it seems to be striking a chord with the... with the light novel moe sort of audience. But I'm like, oh, I've seen all this song and dance before. I know exactly what's coming. Like, I can see the puppet strings, like, right away. And it's
what
like,
if you're wrong,
I'm not
though?
Used to...
I'm probably not wrong.
I'm probably not wrong on this one. There's still room for it to do something interesting plot-wise, but character-wise... So plot-wise, maybe there's going to be some interesting twists. Sure. It has an interesting convoluted setup. A little too convoluted, actually. It's a light novel. But character-wise, I feel like I'm not going to be surprised on this one.
Okay. Because that one was third.
Fourth,
I was like, I could pick... No, I'm just saying, like, I was looking at shows to watch this season, and I was like, maybe that...
Cause right, because like, people are talking it up.
Yeah, people are talking about it. Didn't get to even the first episode still, so...
Yeah, is it
my poison dick again? Does he have a poison dick?
Because
that's kind of funny, like... That well, there's only made one love interest. Ad for me. The guy's yeah. poisoned.
No, well, I mean, there's only one love interest, so it's not quite. Again, it's not like equal and ollie to the key works. It is like a different. It's like a. It's like those have died, and this is its reincarnation in the modern time. It's wearing a different. It's wearing a different outfit, and it speaks with different slang.
Because it's shown up with a mustache under its nose. Hello, sir.
Yeah, it's like this is.
Hey, don't I know you? We've never met before.
A man from the 1800s. Dies and was reincarnated in 1970, so it's virtually unrecognizable, but it's the same person.
Okay.
You know?
Interesting. Oh. All right.
Well, okay.
All right. That's a pretty good break there, because can head on into Twitter time now. You ready for that?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Exidor asks, are we starting to see the U.S. convention bubble deflate? I don't know. Mm-hmm. That will be an interesting story to watch.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any perception on this? Do you watch this stuff at all?
No, you would know more about it than I would, actually.
So, conventions really became a bubble, big time. Mm-hmm. There is a show, at least one show every single week. Not just one show. There's many, many shows every single weekend all across the country. And what happened with comic book conventions is that they've become clearinghouses for celebrities to just celebrity appearances. So, basically, the Houston Comic Con now, the main event is... whatever crazy celebrity they paid the quote on. So in other words, they should have a big sign. Celebrities where we paid the quote, which is, sometimes it's fucking Captain America. It's like Chris Evans shows up to these things. They're paying him like $1.5 million to show up to these things and sign autographs. Like they'll have like half the cast of Avengers there because the convention makes so much money hand over fist. And like, these are the kind of appearances where like Chris Evans sits in a room, looks straight ahead. Someone walks in and stands next to him, thumbs up, photo, next, that's it. And they're paying like $150, $250 for that experience. They get an autograph too. Mm-hmm. That created this huge bubble because actors are more than happy to take that fucking money. It's not easy, but someone like Chris
basically
Evans...
basically lying on the ground.
Yeah, well, someone like Chris Evans, the only thing they're going to ask him to do is show up, tell a few jokes, smile at the crowd, do 2 hours of interview of autographs and photographs, and get the fuck out.
Uh-huh.
That's it. So, of course, they're going to take it. Anyway, this created a gigantic convention bubble in the United States. And it does seem like the walls are starting to crack a little bit. You're starting to see more and more stories of scam conventions that are falling apart. Like, more scam cons are starting to fall apart.
I have noticed that, yeah.
Like, you're starting to see more and more headlines about conventions that, you know, it turns they ran off with the money, or it was shut down halfway through, or whatever. And
I know it's a totally different situation, but I can't help but think of one extra hour in the ball.
Yeah,
pit.
Right. Well, DashCon has provided like a go-to reference right. Anytime you want to talk about
a much smaller
convention.
Scale, but yeah.
But like that's kind of what we're seeing now. Anime cons did not necessarily fall into the same habits as comic book conventions. They did not just become giant pop culture shows where, like, Phoenix... Okay, for example, Phoenix Comic Con happens in, like, a couple... later this year. I just saw a guest announcement where their biggest guest, their big final guest at Phoenix Comic Con is Dick Van Dyke. Who is going to Comic Con to meet Dick Van Dyke? Now, I would love to meet Dick Van Dyke. I love Diagnosis Murder just as much as the next man.
Yeah.
But I didn't come to Comic-Con. Like, that's neat and everything, but that's so weird. That's like Hollywood Museum.
Also, like, his rate couldn't have been that high because I
had him wash my car once.
No. I follow. There's a sketch comedy group on YouTube called 5 Second Films, and sometimes they'll get little celebrities. And Dick Van Dyke was on that.
Oh, was he?
Yeah,
he's just a nice guy.
He's a nice fella. And Patton Oswalt was on it. It's just like the hallmarks of
if you can get like go. You unless you paid Patton Oswalt a decent quote, mm-hmm. you probably couldn't get him. Well,
he may have just liked the guys. So
that's the thing. Little shows like that, sometimes you can pull celebrity guests because they think you're cute.
Yes,
you're like, oh, this is a cute little show. I'll do your cute little show. You cute little guy or whatever.
That's like, I associate Patton Oswalt with. If I see him at a thing, I'm like, oh, okay. When are we going to talk about MST3K?
We will. We got questions about it, so we'll talk about the new Mystery Science Theater 3000. but anyway, so I'm going to watch the convention. I watch that stuff pretty closely. I got a lot of friends in that world, and it's an interesting time for sure to find out what happened. I don't know if we're at the end of the bubble or not, but we're certainly not at the end of the bubble, and I don't even know if it started to really pop yet or not, but we'll see, and it's an interesting thing to think about. Branko Berkson wants to know, have you seen the new Mystery Science Theater 3000? Man, I almost don't want to get on this subject.
I mean, like, so I
almost don't want to talk about it. Well, I don't like it. And it's hard for me because...
You have a bigger horse
in this race. No, it's not. It is not hard for me. I apologize for phrasing it that way. It's just a fucking TV show. But I was... huge fan of Mystery Science Theater. Grew up with
you. Have a bigger horse in that race. It's like part of your... I don't know if you were a child, but it was at the time, but it is part of your...
I first saw it on television when I was like 8 years old or
it's
9
part of your childhood, right?
Or something
so it's
like
a,
that. Yeah. No. I wouldn't have been that young. It was early 90s, I think. So I would have been like 11. And I saw one of the early Joel episodes. This is one of those things I have a very vivid memory of sitting on the couch and Mystery Science Theater comes on. And I'm like, wait, you could do that? Mm-hmm. You could just sit there and make jokes during the movie and, like, someone would pay you and they would put it on TV? I remember that moment going off in my head. I've seen a lot of Mystery Science Theater, and I had a lot of DVDs and everything.
Uh-huh.
So huge, huge, huge fan. Formative. Like middle season, like early season, first 9 seasons of Simpsons, Conan O'Brien stuff. Like, formative.
Yeah. So you have a bigger horse in that race because they're playing with something that you feel like you know and have adopted intimately in some way.
Yeah, part of the fabric of me,
right?
I guess it's just a TV show, completely external to me.
Yeah,
but I have an attachment.
But you
I have an earthly attachment to Mystery Science Theater.
Right.
something that I should shed.
Well, I like the show, and I have fond memories of watching it, but I watched it as a teenager, and it wasn't like that. It wasn't like a formative thing for me, so I don't have... My horse in the race is fairly small. I'm like, oh, I'm familiar with this, and I feel like I understand it pretty good, but it's not like... Not like close to me, so it can't like hurt my feelings.
Yeah,
but it's capable of hurting your feelings.
Yeah,
so that's why I'm like, oh, you should be the one to talk. I have all sorts of complaints about that show, but you're the one who should really talk about
Someone
it.
Has a question if I'm a Joel man or Mike man. Mike's episodes are funnier, but I prefer Joel's persona and his delivery. They're both great. I like them both. They both have really wonderful episodes. Mm-hmm. They're both upstanding people. Like, yeah. I like them both. In time, like I used to just be a Mike guy, but I feel like as you get older, you turn more into a Joel guy. You just want that folksy Midwestern charm. You want that laid back delivery, which is important if we're going to talk about the new one. I'm dancing. I'm just talking about the old one because I don't want to talk about the new one so bad. I really don't like it at all. And that's the thing. Like, I like Jonah Ray. I think he's a good comedian. I liked his show, The Meltdown, with Kumail Nanjiani on Comedy Central. I've enjoyed it. When I used to listen to the Nerdist podcast, he was the thing that I liked about it, him and Matt Myra. They were good. Baron Vaughn, who plays Tom Servo, he's a really funny guy. I wasn't really familiar with the guy who plays Crow. I love Patton Oswalt still, even though he's pissed a lot of people off. I'm still a fan of that guy.
Felicia Day is really good in it.
Felicia Day's great in that show. She's fine.
Yeah.
They only gave her one fucking take. I don't know why, but they left
so
her
clear
screw-ups
that they gave
in.
Everybody one take.
They left her screw ups in the show. And like clearly the take was too long. They're like, well, we don't have time to go back and fix this. So they just left Felicia Day flubbing lines in, like in almost every episode. She fucks up a line. And I'm just like, why didn't you give this poor woman more takes? Why don't you give these people? Oh, because they don't have time or money or anything. But here's a major problem with the show. What they're doing is they're like speed reading jokes off of a script. And, you know, of course, Mystery Science Theater is always the idea that it's not meticulously written and they kill themselves watching these movies over and over again to come up with the best material. The thing is that in previous episodes of Mystery, the old show, it felt like they cut some jokes out and like left room to breathe.
There would be 10 seconds of silence.
There would be silent, well, long period. Actually, like old Mystery Science Theater has long periods of silence. Like there's boring ass. Like I would say your average episode of Mystery Science Theater is pretty boring. Mm-hmm. It's pretty boring. There's a lot of dead space in there. Uh-huh. But that's part of the show. I'm not saying you have to have that, but they're not racing to get the jokes out. They're not like running at the goalpost all the time. And like in this, you have three nervous guys, like super nervous to be the new hosts of Mystery Science Theater, and it's they're flop sweat the entire time, and they're just speed reading these jokes.
There's not a full
you
second
can't do it
of
fast
silence.
Enough. Yeah, like I was watching
a baffling
Wizards of the Lost Kingdom, a movie I've seen before, and its sequel. I've seen both of them. I rented them from Casa Video in Tucson, Arizona. If anybody out there remembers Casa Video, Tucson, Arizona, I rented Wizards of the Lost Kingdom 1 and 2 from there. Some of us were around before it was cool, is what I'm saying. Anyway, so they did both of those movies, and I turned on the first one, and in the first 10 minutes, Felicia Day screws up a line, and they don't fix it, and they immediately start yelling jokes to the point where the context of the jokes change according to the cut. Mm-hmm. So, like, cut, here's a stupid shrine thing, and they make a joke about the shrine thing. A second later, cut, here's a bunch of guys marching and they make a joke about the march. Cut, completely different joke in context about whatever is happening on screen at that exact moment. Mm-hmm. Cut, joke that would only work if you was breathing space on either side of it.
But there isn't.
Because they're trying to deliver like a casual line that someone is saying.
And just, like,
but they have to run through it. Like the nature of the joke will be this guy on screen is saying something slow and casual, like, hey, what's going on? And they will have to run through that line.
And the next person just steps on
it. And the next person steps right on the other joke. It's not for me. I'm going to continue to give it a shot. Mm-hmm. I'm not, like, super, like, angry at it or like, oh, it's the worst thing ever or whatever. Like, I feel like there are funny jokes in it. Like, it did make me laugh a few times. I like I said, Patton Oswalt and Felicia Day are fine, but, like, I just don't think that the delivery and the guys are too nervous, and the delivery is not good, and the jokes are, frankly, not particularly funny either. Like, there's a lot of think geek style jokes where it's just reference video game, reference Star Trek, reference Star Wars, and that's it. The joke is the reference. Hey, nerds, you've heard of this. Here's your Think Geek joke.
Uh-huh.
You know, your Nerdist.com joke or whatever. And that's not...
Yeah, the Midwestern...
Back in the 90s, it was dumb hipster references to old movies and music and stuff, and that's fine. It was a different kind of nerdiness, but maybe I just appreciate that more.
Well, it was they were references to those things because it was like, Joel and Mike were like, you're Midwestern dad, and these are their dad jokes. Even when the joke wasn't funny, it was funny that it was like cute in a uncle making a joke kind of way. This is like... They sound like people in their like mid-20s, early 30s, and they're making...
They're trying to be the funny guy at the party.
Yeah, the funny guy at the party is not your uncle at a reunion. Those are two very different things.
Yeah. It's like that episode of Seinfeld where George yells out the joke in the movie theater and then goes, and then someone steps on it, so he goes back to do it again. Anyway, it's I don't know, man. That show is a pretty big bummer for me, and I don't like to talk about it because I went online and was like, and had my hot take, like, oh, I don't think this is very good, and got
blowback,
zero fucking support, and a bunch of people like, I'm enjoying it, and like a little, like, the emoji where it's like, I'm enjoying it, you know, like that thing, and I'm like, all right.
the kids have moved on without
yeah.
you.
Yeah, it's over.
I used to know what it was.
Yeah, I used to know what it was. But then it became strange and unknowable to me. Anyway.
It's the children who are wrong.
Yeah, it's the children who are wrong. Anyway, we should move on. I spent a good 10 minutes on that fucking thing. Hyrus Infinity wants to know, do you think Sukasuka is in danger of facing the same hurdle as interviews with Monster Girls, specifically having a young group of girls want to bone the uninterested adult male character?
I don't know where this is coming from. The children don't want to bone him. Like, that hasn't even been remotely insinuated. There is a shitty character who is, like, of age, who makes jokes about, like, oh, you're watching over these little girls. Sure, you don't have a Lolita complex, LOL. And it's like, shut the fuck up. But that's it. Like, that's the
only
thing.
Isn't that a fig leaf? Isn't that like a fig leaf?
It's
usually intended to be like winking at the audience.
Yes,
about that sort of thing.
That's what it's for. But the actual context, there's no remotely, like, the children aren't remotely sexualized. It's just they act like little urchins in like Oliver or something like that. They are orphans. They act like bratty orphans. That's it. So yeah. I mean, like, no. But there's like four busty teenagers, or are they adults? Some of them are adults, some of them are like 16. You know how it is, anime. But they're all like, they all just exist in the cast. They don't appear to be in love with the male lead except for the one love interest. So, but yeah, like, there's not like a weird guardianship. It has nothing to do with interviews with Monster Girls as far as its potential problems or whatever. It's not gross in that way.
Okay.
It goes out of its way to be like fan servicey in ways where it's like, this is not necessary, this is dumb, but in the way that like most to me resembles key anime, resembles like clan ads and canons and stuff like
yeah.
that. So
okay, Flumite wants to know, this is a question for you, best horny dragon, Toru or Nina?
It's a tough call.
I don't have an opinion on this.
I don't think I can pick between them. I like them both a lot, so I don't make me choose. Don't make me choose between dragon babies.
All right. Can't choose?
No.
Matt Ellie wants to know, do marquee titles like My Hero Academia or Attack on Titan raise all ships for that season? Ships meaning the metaphorical, not like ships like these two characters. Or,
yeah.
Anyway. Or do they make it impossible for anything else to get attention? I have found that it raises all boats. That's it.
Yeah.
Everything gets more attention as a result. Our site has more traffic as a result of all that stuff being on at the same time, and so everything else's traffic is up. Vice and Luna has more traffic now as a result of Attack on Titan being around. So
wow.
Thanks, Attack
Damn.
On Titan.
Didn't even know that.
You're keeping me afloat. yeah, so it raises all boats, and there's generally more interest in everything when you have people excited about one thing.
Mm-hmm.
It increases excitement for everything else and also gets more exposure for everything else. So, yeah.
Cool.
Good times. Stefan wants to know, Dragon Maid ended with an impromptu boss fight of sorts. Do you mind it when ongoing manga adaptations finish like this? Do you mind it?
No, I mean, it just depends on the approach. Is it totally lifeless, or is it a nice little emotional coda, or just, it's all about, like, the original people involved in the writing and whether they know what they're doing or not, so.
Right. Right. CC Takata wants to know, which spring show do you think is going to be a surprise hit of the season? I don't think there's going to be a surprise hit.
We know what the hits are. Pretty, they're, none of them are surprises. Like, Attack on Titan, My Hero Academia, and Recreators were all very obviously, well, this is going to be a hit of the season, and so far, yeah, you know, those are pretty much... I mean, the only surprise was Suka Suka, but it's not that big a hit. It's just like, it's like the ReZero of this season, if that makes sense.
That's a hit.
Well, yeah, you're right. If ReZero had no, ReZero had no competition at the time that it came out, basically. There wasn't any other, like, big sort of four-quadrant-y, four anime. It is, there's no, there's not four quadrants in anime, but mainstream sort of appeal.
I know what you mean.
Yeah. There wasn't anything like that when the season's ReZero was airing. So pretend that ReZero was still airing. What I mean is Suka Suka fully embraces the otaku market, the male, more male-driven otaku market, and seems to be have gotten them very, very excited and very, like, gathered in one area over this as opposed to any of the other otaku things aimed at them this season.
Mm-hmm.
But there's three other, like, more broad audience things that are bigger than it. So, like,
oh, okay.
Do you see what I mean?
Like, yeah, I see what you're saying.
ReZero, even at the height of its popularity, like, it is hitting that threshold of, this is for otaku, though. You know what I mean?
Okay, yeah.
So, and Suka Suka is like, this is for otaku, though. The three other things are like, this might not be.
Okay,
so,
I see what you're saying. I see what you're saying.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely, Jeff, this is a good question. If Ancast were a piece of art brought to life in Recreators, who would be summoned as the most culturally relevant character, you or me?
You. No.
Dude, you have, like, twice as many Twitter followers
No,
as
but
me.
When you think of Ancast, even though Ancast is not a fictional work, you think of Zach first.
Relevant to the world? You.
I think too. We must be in love.
Aww. Well, we are married.
the people were right. It's actually Boston.
It is Boston.
Boston.
If you count, like, likes and retweets and, like, social media attention, Boston is definitely it.
Uh-huh.
Definitely it.
I apologize, my nose is all stuffed up. Try not to be gross on camera, but sometimes I can't help it.
Yeah. Culturally relevant, that's the question. And for me, that means social media presence, and that's obviously you. Like, that is obviously
yeah,
me.
But it's not, like, tied to the Ancast, per se, directly.
If it's tied to the Ancast directly and it's not me, that's an insult, because I've been making this whole show the whole
that's
time.
That's what I'm saying.
The only constant.
That's what I'm saying. So it would be you, right?
I don't think so.
I think it's you.
Culturally relevant is a thing. That's a different...
Yeah, but if it's a... who knows? Who knows? This is a silly thing, because it's not a fictional work, so it wouldn't count.
All right. Let's see. Danger wants to know, with AOT Season 2 out, Attack on Titan, Shingeki no Kyojin Season 2...
Shingeki no Kyojin.
The... What was it? The something onslaught? The Arrowton onslaught? What was that called? There was a fan group translating it that way for a while just to be like, actually, it's this, because Attack
name,
on Titan is not proper English, and they were making a big deal out of that for
it's
a while.
That's what Isayama wanted to call
like
it,
like the
so
Etroan onslaught or something like that. I don't know.
Something ridiculous.
now, somebody in the chat says, didn't Justin create Ancast? No, he did not. I conceived of the show, executed it. Justin founded the site in 1998-ish,
right,
and then handed it over like a year or two later to somebody else.
Just to be clear on that.
Yeah, just, well, hey, that's, it's not appropriate to credit Justin with the creation of this podcast.
Right.
That was me.
Yeah.
So I'm just saying. all right. With Attack on Titan Season 2 out, discussions are popping up again about the author's supposed pro-nationalist views.
Mm.
Do you have any opinion on that?
I have lots of opinions on that. Man, so many opinions. So I've done a lot of reading on this because I like Attack on Titan so much, and it means a lot to me. It does. Like, it's not just... I am a fan of that outside of, oh, it's popular and it's easy to watch. Like, I am a fan of it. I love its characters. I really like it. I actually own a lot of things from it. They're just... I should put them on the table back here. But I own a fair amount of merch from it, various... that I've gotten in various places.
Kind of hard not to.
Yeah. So I have thought about this a lot, because I'm like, oh, it, you know, I would be very upset if it was like a pro-nationalist thing, but I'm not going to like turn a blind eye to that either. But I've done my research, and no, I think that, so the reason that people say it's pro-nationalist is for two reasons. First of all, if you were to look at it, like, if you were to look, first of all, the opening scene, the opening theme, which everybody loves that opening scene theme, but it is in the style of Nazi propaganda. Very... sort of deliberately, I think
the show is super on the nose about that stuff.
Yes, it's super on the nose. Like, you can't look at it and not think, you know, this looks a little bit like, I mean, like, yeah, but I thought that was the point, and obviously they're not, because if you look at the tone of the show and the things that it's saying, it's not like, yeah, nationalism, because we know what that looks like in anime, we know what it looks like in a lot of things.
Yeah, it's not
Attack on Titan, which is very, like, everybody's incompetent, the war effort is a joke, you know, that you don't do that for, like, propagandic nationalist stuff. It goes against the very spirit of it, you know? So there's that, but people who maybe do a more surface reading or are responding to the opening theme and stuff like that are saying, like, oh, this looks nationalist. But if you watch the show in context, it's like, okay, but they're tearing all this stuff down, so what are you talking about? But there's the other thing, the big thing, is that there was a rumored statement by Hajime Isayama. Here's the thing. It wasn't by him specifically. It was by an account, an anonymous account, that people think was him because...
God, I hate this shit so
yeah.
much.
Yeah. So the statement that was made was somebody was talking about the history of Japan's involvement in Korea at prior to World War II, the war crimes that were committed in Korea prior to World War II.
We hear about this constantly because of the tension between the two countries.
Tension. Yes. Yeah. But I just wanted to specify what was being discussed. And an account that is not, it wasn't Hajime Isayama's like account. It was somebody that, it was an anonymous one that people think was probably him because they were like, well, it seems likely that it was him because of they tweeted about similar things at similar times or something like that. And it was like, oh, well, that wasn't like that bad because... It was basically an argument of, like, sure, we had slavery, but the slaves were treated well, right, ... The kind of thing that that people in, like, Antebellum South or whatever, like, well, the slaves were treated right? Like, it's this bad education thing. Anyway, point is, so where he was like, well, we didn't treat them that bad, right? So it was, you know, it basically an example of bad education, and it may or may not have been him, but it was said, and people were like, well, what if it was him? So, yeah, I hate it, too, because it's, like, just explaining the story is way too complicated. However, if he said that, it was shitty. That does not preclude nationalist views or a nationalist viewpoint or writing a nationalist work at all, because just as you have people who are like who wouldn't consider themselves racist and are not like I don't know how to say this. They consider themselves progressive people, but their history lessons, as far as what they know about slavery and the history of the institution of slavery in the West, are garbage, and they, like, say things that are woefully misinformed, and, like, they'll say things of, like, oh, well, this wasn't that bad, like, oh, well, Tennessee was part of the Union or whatever, and it's like, oh, no, because of this, that, and the other. Like, so I equate that to, like, okay, Isayama said something that was a response of Japan's, like, horrible education system when it comes to talking about what their participation in the war was, which I could chalk it up to that. You could chalk it up to anything. But regardless of, you know, Isayama could have the most, like, repellent super nationalist views ever. But if he does, the story that he wrote is so horribly bad at saying the exact opposite of all those things throughout its run that, like, I don't know how to equate those things. But the point is, Isayama wrote a very anti-nationalist story. Whether his own personal views match up with it, if that was an accident, if this is an Orson Scott Card sort of thing, you know, who knows. But Attack on Titan as a story in a vacuum is extremely anti-nationalist, so make of that what you will.
It reminds me a little bit of, it's less so, but the movie Saving Private Ryan, mm-hmm. which gets interpreted a lot as this, like, rabidly pro-America, pro-war kind of a oorah sort of a movie. Mm-hmm. It's not. At all. The movie's fairly critical of the American military and how much sacrifice has to go into war, and ends with, like, a tattered American flag waving in the sun, and there's a lot of rumination on wasting life and stuff like that in that movie. It's not a pro-war movie in the slightest, but people mm-hmm. take it that way, and they interpret it that way. Mm-hmm. And, like, it is saying two things. It's presenting you with one image, and the emotion behind it is something else completely, and what it's portraying is different from the images you're seeing. Mm-hmm. And if you only watch the first 20 minutes or so of Saving Private Ryan, you might think, oh, this is a rabidly pro-war movie. And the people making these arguments have seen generally only the first couple episodes and are, for whatever fucking reason, arguing about it on the internet, having only seen about three episodes of it, but that's life.
It happens.
So it just seems like that's where it comes from. It's just ignorance, and people don't want to do the fucking reading or watch the show. They just want to complain about it and attack people on the internet. Mm-hmm. So that's the discourse that you're stuck with.
Yeah. If I had to guess, so you know, again, nobody can know this guy's like heart and his true intentions unless he says them out loud, and even then he could be lying to you, that kind of a thing. But if I had to guess based on my love for the story, my analysis of it that I've done, and the many interviews that I've read and seen, because there's a fair amount of video interviews with this guy. Spoilers, he looks a bit like Levi. So if you're wondering which of the characters in the story is his, like, if I was in Titan, it's Levi. But, like, from what I gather, if I had to put a conjecture out there about what I think his feelings are, just based on what the statements that he's made, and this is just my pure conjecture, I think that he's a big fan of military history, and he's a big fan of, like, he likes the ephemera of it. He likes the technology. Like, the technology, basically, he invented a weapon. The show is largely based around a weapon he invented to fight giants. And it is very detailed, meticulous of, like, this is how the weapon works. And here's how the cannons work. And here the technology is from the specific part of the 18th century, but this technology is a little newer, that kind of thing. Like, it's very immaculate. I think he cares about that stuff, and he's really interested in the nuts and bolts of military history, as many people are. Mm-hmm. But I think that he has there is a great, like, conflict within him as far as, like, how can I love this stuff and be okay with, like, you know, these are weapons of war. They're bad things. And I think that is echoed throughout his story. Because the horror of war and the pointlessness of the crusade against the Titans is very foremost in the story. It is not like, yay, we're going to get rid of the Titans. Like, the Titans are a distraction. They are basically a biological weapon employed by child soldiers against them by the state. You know, it's a bad situation. So, like, you know. So I think it's just a great conflict within him where he's like, yeah, I believe in the, like, brotherhood of the military, and if we band together, we can do anything and beat down our enemies. And it's like, but what if the enemies are just people and this is wrong? Like, he's dealing with both at once is, I think, what's going on. Either way, like, it is a very thoughtful story. I think people, sort of like Cowboy Bebop, Attack on Titan is the same pool where people talk about how cool it is, but they don't really tend to talk about how good the writing is. In both of the cases, it's like, this is a very human story with very nuanced emotions. So, like, there's a lot of screaming in Titan, but there's a lot of sincere emotional development in there, too. So, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen enough of the show to know that. Mm-hmm. I've seen enough of the show to know that it is not telling me that I should be a fascist or right. give in to a fascist government. Mm-hmm. I don't think that that's what it's espousing. I don't think that that's what it's saying to me. I don't mm-hmm. think that it's arguing that that's the solution. And so I reject those arguments.
Right.
All right, Jeff Rieberg wants to know, as people mostly outside the Weekly Shonen Jump bubble, it's true, have you guys heard any hype for the promised Neverland?
I've heard it, but I don't know shit about this.
Yeah, same.
So I'm like, it's a big manga that's like tied to like some American thing because like American comic people know about it, but I don't know. So I'm a dummy when it comes to that. I don't know a whole lot about manga. I study more like anime, what's coming up, what's well known, it's the production history, etc. But manga, I'm in the dark a lot.
I'm in the middle of putting together a big manga preview. It's not a manga preview guide. A spring manga guide for the end of May. And it wasn't in there, but that's all the manga research that I've done lately is just that stuff. Uh-huh. So you're catching me kind of at a bad moment.
Mm-hmm.
I have heard of it. I have heard almost no hype. So if that answers your question and gives you whatever data you were looking for, I hope so, but barely.
I've heard
manga circles just don't really cross over that much.
I'm not in manga circles, but I've heard hype. I just don't know why. I don't know what the connection is. So I'm not.
We'll see.
You know.
We'll find out about it soon enough.
I know it's going into Shonen Jump, or it's Shonen Jump related, adjacent. So I don't. Yeah, that's all yeah. I know.
Alex Osborne wants to know, once season 2's 12 episode run concludes for Attack on Titan, how long do you think the wait will be for season 3? Not as long.
Yeah, I would certainly hope not.
No, not as long.
Of course, season 3 is all the military coup stuff, so.
Maybe they'll get it, like, that'll be cheaply animated by nobody, whoever.
They can afford to do that, because, like, this season, thank God that it looks as good as it does, because it is not something that would remotely work if they couldn't animate it really well. It is the most animation-intensive part of the story. But the military coup, people talking in rooms and subterfuge and stuff like that, you know, you could do that a little cheaper, you know? So.
Mm. All right. This is the last Twitter question we've got. Last week's Answer Man got me thinking, what were your favorite fan subs back in the day? You know, in the ye olde Anime Club VHS trading days. Well, I was heavily involved in that stuff. I had a fan sub website for tapes where I did tape trading, and I would mail tapes out to people and take tapes in, and I had a whole library, and I would... Yeah, I did all that stuff back in the, like, 1996-ish. Mm-hmm. And Kodocha fan subs were the best at the time. That was Justin's group. It's one of the... how Justin and I knew each other from before. Mm-hmm. Very vaguely. We didn't know each other very well. But he ran that site, and they had the purple tapes with the clamshell packaging and the white labels and the little gold Kodocha foil leaf stamp on the top. Mm-hmm. Their tapes were usually the best. You know, I don't really remember a lot of the names from the groups. I remember, like, VKLL, they did, like, Sailor Moon, and, Hecto did those funny old Roni Kenshin tapes that had, like, they were translated... Literally Chinese folks translating Chinese translated manga, not the show,
oh
the
my
manga,
God.
And then translating that back into Japanese and then back into English from there. I'm pretty sure that's the story of how Hecto Fansubs did it. And so what you're getting on the screen is literally a translation of the comic because it lines up one to one in most cases. And so that's what you're getting. And so, like, there's a scene, like, my favorite thing to quote is, like, this scene in, like, I think it's episode 3 or 4 where he's talking to Sanosuke, and Sanosuke turns around and he's wearing his jacket with the symbol on the back that says bad, or, you know, Warui or whatever. And Kenshin looks at it and says, like, why for you have sign of bad on back of shirt?
Ugh.
Yeah. I mean, it's not quite like those One Piece bootlegs with Sunkissed and Liar Boo and all that stuff. But Rufy, stuff like that. But yeah, that's One Piece starring Captain Monkey D. Rufy is it's a different kind of going merry.
Good night, everybody.
I have a lot of memories from back then. There was Tomodachi fan subs. They did a bunch of stuff. Fushigi Yugi, I think. That was something girls. Man, I can barely remember. But yeah, no, I had a huge tape library. I would send tapes out. I would go to the student union post office at my college, and earlier than that in high school, I would go to my local post office once a week and just take a big load of tapes down. And I would go to Costco to do runs for VHS. So we would go to Costco, get a shopping cart, fill it with tapes, and that would be our stock for like 2 months. Running fan subs. It was the only way to get anime back then.
Anime fans, you have it so fucking easy now.
I had 4 VCRs daisy-chained in my dorm room college and in high school. In my room, I had 4 daisy-chains. I had an SVHS deck linked up to them, so that's the source. Mm-hmm. So you put the highest quality tape in the source, and you copy from that, and you mail those tapes out to whoever wanted them.
Like, y'all got it so easy now.
Techno Girls, someone in the chat brings it up. Yeah. But yeah, no, like, if you wanted Escaflowne, the way that I saw Escaflowne was, I walked into my anime club in college. I was in high school, it was a college anime club. The college high school thing gets tricky for me because I became an anime fan in, like, 95, 96. Uh-huh. I went to college in, like, 98. I'm old. Sorry. I'm old. So it gets a little blurry in there, and I was heavily involved in tape trading that whole time. And so I walked into the anime club, and Escaflowne was on the screen. I remember the tarot card flipping around, and everybody excited. And, like, that show had everyone really excited at the time. You saw 2 episodes. That's all they would show you. The anime club show, the tape had 4, but they only showed you 2. You'd have to, if you wanted to, you could, like, beg the tape master to, like, let you borrow the tape, but they wouldn't let anyone borrow popular shows. Of course, there's literally a guy who can stop you from watching anime.
Yeah.
Who could just stop you, be like, I'm not loaning you Trigun.
And people talk about the good old days about anime being better. It's like, no, bitch, you just got so much less of it.
Yeah.
It wasn't better.
You get to see those 2 episodes, and then he has the tape, and you have to come back next week and watch the tape. If you become friends with him, which is what I did, you get the tapes. So I became the guy that had the tapes, because that's the guy you want to be, and also you get to watch everything.
Right.
So I literally, like, Utena and Ascafone, both of these shows, to see the finale, I have a very vivid memory of running down to my parents' mailbox. And I grew up in rural Arizona in a fucking mobile home. I grew up poor in the middle of rural Arizona. Running down the dirt driveway to our mailbox and hoping that the package would be in there with the final Ascafone tape, with the final Utena tape. And I remember getting the last Utena tape and running back in to my room and just stuffing it in the VCR and crying like a baby at the end of that show. Same with Ascafone.
Yeah.
Man. Those are good memories, but it sucked.
Yeah.
Sucked.
Like, I have fond memories.
Back then. Like, if you wanted to watch a lot of anime, you were kind of fucked.
Yeah. Well,
unless
I mean,
you had, like, a lot of friends with a lot of tapes. You were resourceful and scrappy and would, like, go to Goodwills and buy VCRs and figure out ways to get cheap VHS tapes and just get into it. You had to get into it and cultivate, you know, a whole library and everything, and you had to know people and stuff. And that's what it was like getting anime back then.
Yeah. Well, that's crazy to me because, like, that is before my time as an anime fan.
as an adult, it's your time. Yeah.
Yeah. But like, so for me, like, the tape trading is foreign to me, but, like, I wasn't really of the time that a lot of people, I wasn't of the fan sub downloading generation because I had no internet. Compared to people
right,
my age.
Yeah, you grew up in Kentucky. So.
I grew up in Kentucky in, like, a farm.
Middle of nowhere.
So, like, I didn't have internet, but, like, so in the mid-2000s when everybody was downloading fan subs, I saw some fan subs, but I had to rely on my friends who had internet, which would, so this is the similar thing to you, who would burn a DVD of those fan subs
for me. Right. And it became that later on.
But, like, I couldn't watch them myself, mind you. And so the closest I could get was if I loaded up way ahead of time and hoped there wasn't a timeout, I could watch things on YouTube in three parts. So that was the closest. I think that's how I watched the episodes of Outlaw Star that I had missed as a child. Was I found them on YouTube in three parts. And my point is, like, so that is unfathomably difficult to me, but my situation as an anime fan would be unfathomably difficult to people who are getting into fan now. They can get on, like, they can pay $5 a month and see everything on Crunchyroll basically day and date. And what?
This is what I just realized. What I want to see. Go on, finish your story. I just realized what I want to see. I want someone to, maybe I'll do this, but go on.
But for me, like, I watched the fan subs that a friend, and if they decided to cut me off or just decided that you know, oh, I lost interest and I don't really have those files or whatever, then I would never see the end of it or whatever. But so for the most part, I didn't watch fan subs. I watched stuff that I bought singles. I saved my money and I bought singles.
Yeah.
I was the only person. This sounds like a shit that didn't happen, but it's true. I garnered a nickname, the Full Metal Netflix, in my high school.
Right.
People used this nickname for me because I had every disc of Full Metal Alchemist, and they went through, not even joking, like a full 8 or 9 people would be waiting on each disc. And so I had, so what I'm saying is my upbringing was very different from yours, but in some ways it was similar because like Fullmetal Alchemist was on TV at the time, and I would actually tape it off of Adult Swim as well because I wanted to compare the edits, if you can believe it. I wanted
really?
To compare what they took out.
Yeah, that makes sense to me.
Yeah, it was fun because I was obsessed. And so like I didn't have anything else to do. I lived in the farm in the middle of nowhere. So I wanted to compare the edits. So I bought the single DVDs, and then I also had the Adult Swim edits, and I could tell you like all sorts of stuff that like they've cut out and people have forgotten. Like I still have vivid memories of exactly how those episodes differed. But anyway, either way, so I had like a full 8 people waiting on like disc 2 of Fullmetal Alchemist and be like, I want it. And I'm like, sorry, like Julie has that one, and after her, Brent gets it, and then you could eventually get it. But like anyway, so weirdly enough, even though I was in the time where most people who grew up on anime that are my age will have a much more like fan sub centric story.
Yeah,
to
they'll
tell
have
you.
Like a hard drive full of torrents. And
exactly,
shit,
but I didn't have that because of where I grew up. So I was purchasing. I was actually buying anime. That was where all my expendable income went. I did have a job, and I did take on little jobs before I was old enough to get like a job, like a fast food job, just to purchase anime. So you know, and video, I was really into games at the time.
When I had enough money, I would go buy commercial tapes from Best Buy or whatever. You go to Best Buy, they have a VHS anime shelf. I bought Ninja Scroll, Tenchi. The show that I bought was Tenchi Universe, which is the TV show version of the OVA series.
Oh, yeah.
I bought that. That came in these big clamshell And it was a kind of a deal because that one you got four episodes on a tape instead of just two. Mm-hmm. So at the time it was kind of a bargain. But yeah, I had a ton of commercial VHS, all the Slayers and all that shit. Mm-hmm. But the thing that I want to, the thing that I thought of before, mm-hmm. was, what I want to do is see, like, I want, like, a physical representation of how many VHS tapes is this, like, what we cover in a given, like,
oh my God,
anime season.
Yes, yeah.
How many VHS tapes? It would be at least 40 or 50 tapes, because it's 3 to 4 episodes per tape, uh-huh. and each season, each series is, like, 12, 13 episodes long. Some are a little longer.
Well, consider now that the, now you could only probably get 2 episodes on those tapes because of the, you know, like, if you went in any kind of quality.
No, you could get 3 episodes on a tape.
Yeah.
Sure.
We'll say 3. Well, Happy Medium would be 3.
And 4 was pretty much what you could do in the old days. It's 2 hours.
I know,
as long as a movie.
But think about the quality at which stuff
four
is
Four episodes
now.
Was fine quality. Look, this is the way it goes. 2 yeah. episodes, you're looking at, like, great quality. 3 episodes, still pretty good. 4 episodes, good. Mm-hmm. 5 to 6 to 8, and it's SLP. Yeah. You don't want that.
You don't want that.
You don't want that.
That's how I tape stuff
well,
off.
4 is ones. Fine. SLP was like you fit like 12 episodes on a single tape. It was cramming. Like, yeah.
That's how I
And they
look
like fucking trash. And that tape would not be watchable now. Like, if you pulled it out now, you would not be able to watch it because the tape degrades even a little bit. Mm-hmm. And those SLP episodes are not watchable anymore.
Yeah, well, that's how I taped everything. All the anime off of Cartoon Network was on SLP because I had to do it. So anime actually was not allowed in my house. All the stuff that happened.
You were doing contraband.
It was contraband. Yeah. So I had to tape stuff overnight. I had to literally sneak down. I didn't get a whole lot of sleep. I had to sneak down at like 1 a.m. and stick a tape in and just leave it in all night and hope that nobody discovered it before I got up for school the next day. So everything was SLP. So I would stick it in and like horribly adjust the tracking in order to see it at all. Man, so
wow. That's
anime
dedication.
Fandom in the old days. And then you're like the older days. And then, you know.
Yeah.
It's just different now. It's so much easier.
Yeah, yeah. No, there were fights over tapes and stuff, like people getting really pissed off because someone wouldn't give up. And if you were the guy who imported the Laserdisc so the tapes could be made,
uh-huh.
then you were a real hero.
Right.
I imported Karikano Laserdiscs.
Wow.
Because everyone was real excited about it. No, sight unseen. Like, no one had seen it, but we knew the new show from the guy from Evangelion's coming out, and it's a romance. And I was like, whoa, shit, this I gotta see. And so I paid money to have the first Laserdisc imported, and then that was fan-subbed. And then, you know, that the first tape of Karikano I don't think was made from my Laserdisc, but we had a tape made from my Laserdisc for my anime club. They subtitled that one for my anime club. Mm. It was interesting. Mm. It was an interesting experience. But that's what you had to do back in the day, man. And that was 2 episodes. I remember importing it, and it cost me like $87 to get that. I think shipping was like $20 or something. So in the end, I think it cost me like $110, $112 to import 2 fucking episodes of Karikano. Barely animated show. Yeah. Barely fucking animated.
Shit we did for fandom.
Well, that was a tangent.
Yeah. It's entertaining. Like, it's...
Yeah, yeah.
The children need to know.
Yeah, they do. Before we go, we got to wrap up pretty quick here because you got a thing to do. But do we have one... We can take one question from the chat. Sorry, we went off on a little tangent there. We have one question from the chat. Anything? Anything at all? Something from the chat? Got a question?
There's a big delay, so.
Yeah, well, yeah, it's like 20 seconds. Brandon H. wants to know, what's your opinion on Reiner possibly being gay?
I think it's very possible, but it's tied to spoilers.
You think it's possible, though?
Yeah, because it's because Reiner has... So, this is spoilers unless you've read the manga, so I'll be vague, but... Reiner, you may notice, is very, very emphatically talks about how much he wants to marry Krista, and yet there's a scene where Ymir makes a joke about him being gay. Those things are not incompatible, and it has to do with... Reiner, you saw there's a flashback where Reiner obviously had a very bad childhood, and you know, the Titans screwed up his life from a young age, and there's something a little bit off about his place within the military, and like his personality is a little weird. So let's just say there are perhaps there's perhaps the Reiner you see and the Reiner that actually exists under that facade, and those things are very different. And so I think it is very possible that Reiner is gay, but there may be more than one Reiner in Reiner. So let's just leave it at that.
Okay. All right, then. Interesting.
Emir is definitely gay, though. So Emir, completely confirmed by the story. No, she's gay. So there you go.
Zendoshi wants to know, do you see Sakura Quest as doing good as a simuldub, like doing well? I mean, I have no idea performance-wise. Mm-hmm. I guess I'll watch their simuldub. It's a show that takes place in rural Japan with a bunch of Japanese people. Mm-hmm. I don't really need to watch it in English. But I feel like my stance on this is fairly well-known.
You're not a big dub watcher or anything.
I don't watch a lot of dubs.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I grew up having to collect these tapes, mm-hmm. so...
See, and I grew up watching more dubbed...
There's no dubs on those tapes.
Yeah.
If you get dubs, you fucked up because someone copied a commercial tape, and that's wrong. You're not supposed to do that. That's not cool. Mm-hmm. Taping commercial tapes, mm-hmm. not okay.
Right. No, I weirdly enough, I'm way more okay with dubs because most of what I watched was in English via how I got it, which was official releases and television. The fan subs that I got, like I said, fewer of those because I was relying on somebody to burn a DVD for me, which I wasn't going to nag them for, and I didn't watch the show. So that with the Japanese stuff I saw, much less. So.
Yeah. You meant performance. Yeah, I have no idea how. I have no idea how those simuldubs do. I'd be very curious to know. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Anyway, let's see here. Any show this season you're disappointed in? It's a little early for that.
Yeah, it's a little early.
Anything off the top of your head?
Not really. No. You know, all the stuff that I was anticipating, like Bahamut and Titan and stuff like that, like, was good.
We're losing the lights, so we gotta wrap up.
Yeah.
Before we go, though, Bahamut, you said, is it disappointing?
No, I said...
It's great.
It's really good. So.
All right. Okay, somebody asked about Night in the Woods. Uh-huh. I mentioned this on Twitter a couple nights ago. I bought this game. It came out a couple months ago. I bought it on PS4. It's an adventure game. We mm-hmm. play a cat who was dropped out of college.
Yes.
It's better than that sounds. So I play adventure games every now and then. I'm interested in the genre. I grew up playing adventure games. Mm-hmm. Indiana Jones, The Last Crusade, Fate of Atlantis, Day of the Tentacle, all that stuff, Full Throttle. Those are my favorite games growing up. Sierra games, too. I played all that stuff. This is an adventure game. There's been a lot of them recently that are trying to do the same thing this one is, which is authentic teens. Mm-hmm. Okay. I played through the game Life is Strange, which was really good. I really liked that game. People gave it too much shit for its dialogue, but it's well-written, has a lot of really good character stuff in it. It's compelling. The story's good. I would watch a TV show or a movie of that. Like, it was good. The dialogue was super fucking clunky, and they were not authentic teenagers.
Yeah.
Night in the Woods is so authentic, it's painful at times.
No, that is the best
It is
version.
Maybe the most relatable video game I have played in the last decade, maybe. Right. It's extremely well done, extremely relatable. It's just about a kid who drops out of college and is having a hard time and goes back to her sort of failing Rust Belt, depressing town. And there's the palpable sense of ennui mm-hmm. and the dialogue come together for a really authentic...
And it's funny.
It's funny, mm-hmm. and it's authentic as hell. And mm-hmm. The thing that something like Life is Strange was trying to do, this game does it perfectly.
Right.
Not flawlessly, but pretty close. Mm-hmm. And there's another game, Oxenfree, that people talked about a lot. Similar kind of thing. We're trying to do, authentic teens with, snarky, snappy dialogue. No. And it's just this horrible Joss Whedon nightmare.
Nobody has a distinct personality.
Everyone talks in the same exact voice, and they're all quipping, just quip, 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 mm-hmm. quip. But, the characters in this are, vulnerable. They mm-hmm. talk like... People talk now.
And you can immediately... And there's no voice acting, but you can immediately tell the personality of everyone based on very different ways that they speak, which, to me, that's my bar. It's like, I need it, not every... If one character is horribly annoying and quips a bunch, that's fine, but it has to be one person, and then it's like, oh, I see that as their character, and then there's one person who has a completely different voice. For me, it's like, everybody should sound like a different person.
Yeah.
And Night in the Woods, completely achieves that.
Also, I want to point out, you have a gay best friend, mm-hmm. And that character, the way he is executed, is so familiar and so relatable to me. They took someone out of my life and put him on screen.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I highly recommend that game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like
really
he's not
highly recommend.
You can tell immediately. It's fun because, like, you know, we talk about people being coded gay, and people assume that means that they're a stereotype. They're like a queen. They're like a stereotype. Mm-hmm. And this guy, he's coded gay. Like from the minute you meet him, it's like, oh, this guy's gay. But it's not. It's not like a queenie stereotype. It's like a very specific type of excitable, kind of nerdy twink person who's like, it's like, oh, this is a person I know, like a real like gay person that I know.
Yeah, and
it's
his very, fucking issues come out really easily.
Yeah,
like he goes from
immediately.
He goes from being fun, super best friend to oh my god, this guy's issues are dangerous, like pretty quickly.
I'm
like,
Mr. Good Times, but let me overshare to the point it makes
I'm Mr.
you
Good
uncomfortable
times until I am suddenly Mr. Bad Times. Yeah. Like that's that guy.
It's like, oh
that's
my god, I know this person. You know,
that's the guy. Mm-hmm. All right, guys, that wraps us up. Thanks everybody for coming by the chat. We have a great time. We will be back next week with a guest, at least, if not a series discussion, at least a guest. Psychopaths is the next series discussion. It was a close call on the poll. The poll had like 400 votes on it. It was like neck and neck between Psychopaths and Gundam Wing. Psychopaths won the day, for better or worse. So one of these days we'll do Gundam Wing. I'm gonna keep putting it in there. Maybe it'll win next time. We'll see. But thank you guys so much for coming on by. This episode will be up tomorrow on MP3. The theme song is called Bucharest. It's by the band The New Division. You can check them out at newdivisionmusic.com. Don't forget, subscribe to us on iTunes, Google Play Music, Stitcher, all that stuff. Here on YouTube, click like and subscribe. We love you. Thank you very much for coming by the show. We'll see you all next week. Take it easy.
Bye-bye.